Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to the third and final part of my interview with 63-year-old Chris Lammercroft. In part one, we learned of Chris's love for restoring cars, boating, and where his appreciation for conservation and care of our land came from. In part two, we learned of his adventures selling farm equipment in Asia, particularly Thailand and the Philippines. Chris has revealed to us a man who has a carefree side that is equally balanced by his appreciation and love for our environment. And it was in part two that he began to reveal his green credentials. In today's program, Chris continues to express his concern for the environment both in Australia and elsewhere, and he freely shares his thoughts on this topic and further shares his thoughts and philosophies on a range of issues. Now, Chris Lammercroft.
Yeah, just look on a macro scale of things. You don't think of the micro, like the Australian government have done for the last 20 years. You know, there's no long-term process. If you're working for a corporation, you're expected to have at least a five-year plan. A lot of corporations have a 10-year plan.
Yes, that's right.
Having worked for a Japanese major corporation, they certainly have a 10-year plan. If you spoke to a Chinese, they probably have a 100-year plan.
Yes.
But we don't. And there's this total inanity of what we think we're doing. And having said what I've watched in the Middle East, because I used to work over there in the deserts, so the amount of gum trees being planted and rehabilitating the desert, they're going the other way, and successfully. But you look and you think, well, you know, you've got all these this disparity, as I guess is what I'm really alluding to, of people taking on different attempts to either denude the planet. And when we moved, more recently, we moved from Dubbo, where I was working after I came back from Malaysia, to Melbourne. And I said to my wife, having been brought up in Sydney, this place is untouched, Melbourne, in 1980. At Williamstown, you could buy any number of places in Williamstown on the front for a reasonable price. Beaconsfield Parade, you could buy places really reasonably down there. And because our factory was at Thomastown, we used to come in from Whittlesea, and we'd come up and crest a hill on the top of High Street, or whatever the extension of that is, and you'd see Melbourne and the city, and I'd say to my wife, you should just go and buy this farm. Yeah, this is going to be worth a fortune. But you see the expansion of around Melbourne, and I'm talking since 1980, and there was Fountain Gate was the extremities going towards Warrigal, basically. And now, basically, to Warrigal, you can see it's gradually being built up. But you project that out in a grand scale of things, and we can't keep doing this to the planet.
But we keep trying.
Yeah, but you get the, aim our shots more specifically, you get the idiotic comments from, you know, federal politicians saying, oh, we need more population. Excuse me? We should have been able to pick that we're going to run out of water 20 years ago.
Yes.
So we put more population. Sydney, you can't put much more population unless you keep going vertically, because you've got national parks north, south and west, and ocean on the east. So
yes.
So how do they expect to do this? And the population and Mentone, try and find a couple of hundred acres of Mark and Garden in Mentone anymore. So you're now trucking your vegetables from further and further afield. And it just worries the hell out of me. And if you go back to and read a little bit back in history, London was one of the biggest cities in the world when Captain Cook set off to come here. And you think, well, now it doesn't really rate, perhaps, in the rest of the world. And we're now it's an exponential equation of how we populate. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we think we're going to keep doing what we're doing? And Australia's going to run out of minerals sooner or later, and then look at our boom. And you think, how are we going to keep doing this? But what worries me is the apathy of my perception of the younger people these days.
Well, I got to say, Chris, I think some of them are out there doing something, but the great majority aren't. So what would your message to them be?
Well, get off on your bike and go and do something.
Exactly.
Down.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's as if there's such an apathy these days.
That's if I was able to communicate that, through what I said say to you today, I would consider I've done myself a... I would consider I've done the community. Presumably they bothered to do something about it. Even if you do it, one person did something about it, it'd be a right move. But to get people to motivated to do something, which I said before, on air, not going to worry me, although I'm, as people know from my area in Yarra Glen, that I'm fairly vocal about what I think. But I'm not going to be here for very long. Then it's up to my younger son, who's the journalist, is very active. But my other older son is, probably for various reasons, doesn't seem to have the same fire about, and tends to be like the rest of the community, is the fact that these things are happening around us. But unlike in the 60s, where if you didn't like it, you protested, and you really, it didn't matter whether it was Australia or it was America and Europe, you got out there and were active.
And voiced it.
And voiced it. And I don't see that happening today. And that, to me, is probably one of my biggest worries, because change only happens through people being committed. And I don't see the commitment. And it's their life in the future, not That's mine. Right. And I just don't see it happening. And
I mean, silence is consent, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's an acquiescence. Mm. It's even worse.
That's right.
And it does cost you a lot in being vocal. And I know I'm not the most favoured soul, particularly in the Shire of Yarra Ranges with some of our people. But all I'm asking is really, don't tell me no without coming up with an alternative to no. No, don't do it. Don't do that. But would you mind if we shifted around to do this? Because life is a compromise.
Mm.
But don't just tell me no without a second plan or option. And this doesn't matter whether you're talking about the federal government or state government or just what you see happening around you. It's to get active. And sure, you're going to wear a few brickbats from time to time, but that's the price of being on the planet, in my opinion.
Dark on the earth, the water. Don't you think it's sad? What's happened to the water? Our water's going bad. Oceans, rivers, lakes, and streams have all been touched by man.
listen to older voices, reliving the spirit of Australia. I'm Rob Greaves, and you're listening to part three, the final part of my talk with Chris Lammercroft. Chris, in the time we've got left, I just wonder whether you'd be interested in sharing some of your thoughts on life in our society.
I guess I come from privilege, from the fact that my parents were not middle class, but they this happens, you know, particularly with Asian families, so they gave up a lot to give my sister and I a good education.
Most of her parents did,
yeah,
and they went through a lot,
yeah,
to do that. That's right.
And I can remember in the 50s, we used to sell. We lived in a housing estate, and well, the housing estate was across the road from us. But I used to go and get all the copper wire from all the offcuts when they put the power cables through, and sell them to Scrappy, and that was my pocket money.
Yes.
And I used to stack that aside, and I can remember my dad coming to me many a time and saying, listen, would you mind if we had a loan of it? It's 10%. I can remember it was 10%, which was pretty heady stuff for the time it was out. And, you know, if he borrowed, let's say, £5 from him, he'd give me £5.50 back, just irrespective of the time. You know, and it was only a month or 2 months or 6 months. Every year.
But it was necessary for the family
it
to
was.
Keep surviving.
And I didn't find that, I found that...
it wasn't objectionable,
no.
It was just quite acceptable,
yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's
yes.
That was vital.
Yes.
But, you know, these days we don't, and that's what I try to tell my kids, there will be times when times are really tight. It can be through, if you go through divorce, times are always bloody tight for money if you go through divorce. And you can, unless you're super rich, well, one party's going to still be short of cash. Where you know where every shekel is,
yes,
and it's not enough to do what you've got to do. So, you know, you've got to be able to adapt. And a lot of people these days would have no concept of that.
Yeah.
And that worries me because that's your survival skills.
Yeah.
And I find that's a worry too. But, it's too easy. We think we've got it tough here. You go to Malaysia or Indonesia or... But, you know, there is no safety net.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you're balancing without on the high wire without a safety net.
That's right.
If you stuff up, you stuff up.
You're the consequence.
We think somebody was telling me they were with a overseas backpacker. He said, I can't believe it. You've got the only homeless people I've seen with mobile phones. And that may have been just an anomaly, but it tends to empathise the fact that we think we're doing it tough, and we are in our society.
Yeah,
but if you go someplace else,
globally, yeah,
even in the US, geez, I wouldn't like to be in the deep south trying to get unemployment benefits down there.
Well, no, that's right, because the US always presents itself and is always presented as being a very well-off, rich nation, but it really is not like that right across the nation. So the
land of the free.
That's right.
What a old rope that is.
Yes. Yes. I was in the States, what, it was only exactly 10 years ago. And you travel along through some of those border towns and you really see people doing it really, really hard.
Yeah. Put me down, 'cause that's the side of town I was born in.
Listen to older voices, revisiting through recollections.
I think as an Australian, to go to the States, because you've got your concept of what the States is, you know, free and all the rest of it, and you find all the restrictions and the puritanical
views,
and that was probably the thing that struck me the most, is the fact that you've got, let's say in Los Angeles, you know, every coffee shop's a brothel, basically, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah.
And then you go further south and you go to a beach and all the girls are basically covered in neck to knee bathing costumes because it's immodest. And you think, you know, my sister used to live in Houston and I went to the beach there and I was looking around and said, why are they where's the bikinis? And one of the reasons for going to the beach is to check the bikinis.
Of course.
And she says, oh, it's not like
that. Not like that.
I'm not saying that they wasn't their subculture, but that shocked me. And then you only got to watch interviews done with Americans in Australia, let's say, speaking to Denton, and they are very cautious what they say, because they said this will go back to America.
Oh,
to us, it's an innocuous comment and really doesn't matter a jot.
Yeah, don't give it a thought.
But they said, I'll let that go to the keeper. I won't answer that. I've got to go back home.
Yes.
And you suddenly realise they're telling you something about what it's like out there. They may agree with you, but they're embargoed, and that's a terrible thing, B. I mean, you know, the long arm of their bloody law, gets them that far.
Mm-hmm.
Not literally law, but the culture, and I think,
Listen to older voices. Ageless Radio.
And having lived in Islamic states, you look, and I have always said I just really disliked the lack of separation between, well, in Islam, the state
ah, so the church,
the government belongs to the church.
Church.
I mean,
that's
it's
right.
Just an extension of the church. And you think, I've always said that really is the thing that gets me. Hang on, Chris, you look at the states today and what the president's saying,
and very conservative and church
behind Falwell,
it.
And we're headed off in that direction too in the moment. And I think, hang on, what? The states are having a go at the Muslims, but they can't see that that's exactly the same, the radical side of, there's a lot of religions have got a lot of good ethos behind them. It's just that they frequently get hijacked by the fundamentalists, and then it's all ratchet from there on. And I look at the states, I think, can't they understand why people in the Middle East hate them? The hypocrisy of it all, apart from anything else.
Yeah.
And I think, they just don't understand. And they would never understand, I think. And that is a real worry, because you can only have a war if that's going to...
That's right.
And Condoleezza Rice was saying at one stage, we're not going to speak to our enemies. Excuse me. How do you reach reconciliation unless you get a dialogue going? I think she's changed dramatically in the last 2 years. But, well, dramatically for her, as far as you and I can say, might not have changed much. But you think, this is ridiculous. Might is right. And then you get to prison and say, God is on our side. Excuse me. That's stolen from the Islamic faith.
That's right.
And you think,
that
worries me.
You can look at the United States and you can just look back in history and you see it all happening all over again.
Yes, indeed.
It's all over again. We really don't learn.
No.
We really don't.
I mean, even locally, we don't learn.
No.
And it's just... But it gets back. There's always somebody out in the community. It might be me at my level or, you should speak to Pete Steedman. He's a fascinating character. Well, getting back to, reasons that because he's still an activist, but it's us all and everybody at different levels, broadening the debate and saying, no, I totally don't accept what you're telling me. You might believe it, I don't have to, but I keep on going back to my top and some of these activism is the fact that you must reach compromise. You mightn't like where you've ended up, but it's going to be better than, and you will have had some impact. But don't forget, somebody else has got to live, yep. And they've got to have a bit of saving of face, yep, as well. So, but and that's got to happen at all levels in the community, and people with different clout at higher levels have obviously got a different road to hoe and are probably more successful. But you can still do it at local level.
Mm.
And I watched the various ruckuses that happen in Healesville, and you aren't always successful, but they certainly know that they've got to be on their toes, otherwise they're going to get their tail feathers singed, if not shot off.
Mm.
And Pete Steedman, ex-radical student union in Monash, used to be the head of the student union and the first paid editor of a uni magazine in Australia, a minister in the Hawke government,
right,
for this area, a Labourite, and a colourful turn of phrase, but a very good friend of mine. But he's fairly vocal, but he's involved in trying to get the railway through to Healesville, and he was been involved with that railway since it stopped operating, as has Mary Hookie across in the Delhi.
Hmm.
And they're both good buddies. And but he was Richard Neville. He was compatriot in different level. And Pete had to get out of Australia basically because he'd made it so hot for himself with ASIO and everybody else. He was getting so much flak. He went and headed up, I think it was an underground newspaper in the UK. But then he came back and he was head of Oz Music. But even now he's a commissioner for firearms. I said, that's like having that patriot put in charge of the Pakapunyan arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
And and he's just had a win on that to whatever he planned. But he was also trying to get a win-win situation for the off-road motorcycle range riders in the Paul's range, and as the commissioner for that, and he gets these various gigs, including he did the restructure of the timber workers and the timber mills because of his effing and blinding and his strong labour connections, but a very deep sense of ethics. He said, so you reduced, this is to the Bracks government, you reduced yourself to the fact that I'm the only bastard left that can actually talk to the real people. I said, well, something like that. Because he knows obviously the limits in the federal and the state system and what you can achieve. But he also can speak with conviction with the fellow of the common man. But if you can get past the effing and blinding, which is like a lot of politicians, they seem to, women and men, he's an interesting character.
Mm.
Very interesting. I mean, in the I guess you'd say in the media and student radical world, and he comes across here quite regularly, because she spoke to the Shire about the railway yesterday, so trying to set up the working group that will work with the Shire to get the feds.
Chris, that's probably a very good place for us to finish. I think that hopefully you've stimulated a little bit of thought out there, and hopefully we might start seeing a few more faces on the streets verbalising what a lot of people quietly talk about, but don't seem to be too active doing anything about.
Yeah, it's like when you're watching TV and you see something that's objectionable. Don't tell your partner, tell somebody who matters. And as it's often been said, you get 20 pairs of eyeballs staring at a Shire Council meeting or another meeting, and you will change things because you it is too difficult for them to swim against you. So please, people, I've done nothing else than stimulated some discussion. Please just do something about it. I won't be here to worry about it.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Okay.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.